But we begin our program tonight by welcoming to the airwaves Marcy Wheeler. She's an independent journalist who covers national security and civil liberties issues, both at her own site, EmptyWheel.net, and many other outlets, including The Atlantic and Vice News. She's the author of the book Anatomy of Deceit, a primer on the CIA leak investigation. Marcy, thanks so much for making time to come on our program tonight.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we were happy that you could make our program this evening to talk about some of the news reports that I think many of our listeners may have seen last week, that officials within the Trump Department of Justice are considering filing charges against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange for his release of classified U.S. government documents. The discussions covered in various press outlets wasn't very specific, but I imagine that this comes with some veracity in terms of the discussion going on within the DOJ. And Julian Assange, as many are aware, is holed up in the Ecuadorian London embassy for some years now. They gave him asylum, so to speak, in the embassy, where he was attempting to contest sexual assault charges in Sweden on him that he considered a ruse to get him to the United States when Obama was still president to face charges similar to what's maybe being discussed here by the Trump Department of Justice. At any rate, Marcy, maybe you could update us on what we know now about the Department of Justice and what they're contemplating with regard to Julian Assange.
Well, so a couple of important background points. First is that for about the last month, and it's slightly more than a month, WikiLeaks has been releasing what it calls the Vault 7 collection, which is a collection of CIA hacking tools. And pretty much at this point every Friday, they release new tools about how the CIA, for example, hacks TVs, Samsung TVs, to be able to wiretap people in the room. And last week, Mike Pompeo, who is the CIA director and who during the campaign last year was cheering WikiLeaks on to leak Hillary Clinton's emails, came out and basically called WikiLeaks a non-state intelligence agency and said, you know, they don't have First Amendment rights and we have to shut them down now. And was the speech was pretty much entirely about taking on WikiLeaks, which was seen as a response to this Vault 7 release. And then later in the week, Jeff Sessions gave, he had a press availability, and journalists there reported that at the press availability, he said, yeah, we are reviewing the decision. We are considering indicting Julian Assange. And then the next day he said he refused to answer about the implications that might have for other media outlets. So that's kind of the background. The important thing is that under Holder's DOJ, going back to 2010 when the government was prosecuting Chelsea Manning, they reviewed whether or not they could indict Julian Assange because of conversations he had had with Manning before or during the leaks. And they ultimately decided that to do that would risk setting a precedent that would make it easy to he calls it the New York Times rule. It would make it easy to prosecute New York Times for also publishing classified documents or stories based on classified documents. So that's where the Holder administration had been, and presumably Loretta Lynch, who followed Holder at DOJ, stayed with that decision. And what DOJ seems to be doing right now is revisiting that decision. And really importantly, they're doing it at a time when, you know, Jeff Sessions isn't the most brilliant lawyer in the world, but also he doesn't have most senior officials in place. He fired all but two of his U.S. attorneys. Interestingly, the two U.S. attorneys he kept around, who are Dana Bunte, who's a guy, but who's in Eastern District of Virginia, so covers CIA. That's where they were already prosecuting or considering the prosecution of WikiLeaks. And he not only is still on the job as U.S. attorney, but also is the acting attorney general for the investigation into the Russian hack. So So this entire conversation is happening at a time when Dana Bente is in a really unique position historically. He's the guy who's been pursuing WikiLeaks since 2013, and that's a really interesting background for the discussion about whether or not they're going to prosecute Assange.
Thanks for that excellent summary, Marcy. From my understanding, the Department of Justice is looking at what assistance was offered to Chelsea Manning at the time documents were taken by Chelsea Manning from the U.S. military. There's also some discussion about what role Julian Assange may have played in aiding Edward Snowden in his journey, maybe from, I guess it was Hong Kong to Russia.
Yeah.
But what do we know about the particulars of what charges could possibly be leveled against Julian Assange? I've read that conspiracy, theft of government property, and violation of the Espionage Act are among the charges being contemplated.
Right, and it really depends on which leak you're talking about. To indict him on the Chelsea Manning stuff, it was a long time ago. I mean, it's past the normal statute of limitations, not for espionage, but for other normal charges, but it's been 7 years. And also, you know, what kind of cooperation would you have from Manning? How fresh are memories of that? So there are problems with that. There was a discussion between Assange and Manning about how Manning might negotiate some technical aspect, but there again, there's the question of what if I, as a journalist, said to a source or said to publicly to sources, come use my Dropbox or use PGP to encrypt stuff that you're mailing to me. Let's go to Signal. Those are the same kinds of conversations that you might find being criminalized if the Manning prosecution is used. As you said, there is the role that Assange, to some degree, because Assange was trying to get Ecuador to offer asylum to Snowden, but also Sarah Harrison, who's another WikiLeaks employee. She accompanied Snowden from Hong Kong to Russia. So there you would have abetting a fugitive. And that, frankly, might be a way that they could prosecute Assange or indict Assange that would distinguish what journalists normally do. You would be going after Harrison more than you'd be going after Assange, and there is some indication that Sessions wants to go after Assange for something more serious, something that reeks of spying, right? That upholds this Pompeo notion that WikiLeaks is a non-state intelligence agency. And then, more interestingly, the question is, you know, would you indict Assange for publishing the DNC emails? There you have the problem that both Trump and Pompeo at the time were cheering this on. And if I were an Assange defense attorney, I would immediately call them to the stand and say, you know, you certainly believed this was legal during the act. Why don't you believe it's legal now? And then finally that brings us to the Vault 7 that I told you about, these CIA files. The CIA is reportedly, CBS had a report on this week, for example. The government, the CIA and FBI together, are doing what they call a manhunt. They're trying to find the probably contractors, it tends to be contractors who leak these things, who leaked these documents to WikiLeaks, ostensibly because they wanted a debate about how much hacking the CIA should do. But short of having that person, it's going to be really hard for them to indict Assange because they would need that person as a witness or to expose Assange. Moreover, sort of like with the DNC hack, you're going to quickly get into a position where you have to expose certain things that you wouldn't want exposed. You'd have to acknowledge that all these CIA hack documents are legal and are theirs, and that would, you know, create legal problems down the road for both the people who are doing the hacking and for the CIA. And so, you know, I get that they want to do this, but there are two problems. One is the cases that they want to bring, most of them have problems. Either they don't accomplish this kind of grand spying claim they want to make, or they're going to bring testimony that they don't really want, or, you know, then there's the, as Holder used to call it, the New York Times problem, that by doing it, you're going to end up criminalizing other kinds of journalism. And here's the really interesting question, because unless you really pressure the Ecuadorian government, indicting Assange isn't going to do anything. He's still going to be holed up in the closet and the Ecuadorian embassy. So, you know, to some degree, this is just a political stunt, and that may make it easier to indict him for CIA stuff or for the DNC stuff. But what it then does is sets up a precedent, you know, and this is what I think it's largely about, sets a precedent, and kind of serves as a scare tactic. So people like, say, The Intercept, Glenn Greenwald, worries a lot more about being prosecuted for the same, or The New York Times worry about being prosecuted for the same things that WikiLeaks does, without having to take them on. And that, I think, is part of what they're trying to achieve here, is they're trying to, kind of a shot across the bow at journalism generally to say, stop publishing our classified stuff.
Right. Well, that's exactly where I wanted to go next. In your recent article, Marcy, the WikiLeaks deterrent theory, also known as the Arbitrary Official Secret Act, which is your headline of this article, you talk about exactly what you mentioned there, the chilling effect on other media outlets who publish government or classified government documents. If the Trump Justice Department did go forward with indicting Julian Assange, and if he's still in the embassy, the Ecuadorian embassy in London, I guess that would be in absentia. But how much of a chill would that send to fringe as well as mainstream corporate media outlets like the New York Times, like the Wall Street Journal, like the Los Angeles Times?
Well, I think it really depends on, you know, the reason you do it against Julian Assange is because he's not a likable character anymore. There was a time when he was very much a darling of the press. He's now a darling of the right-wing press. But you know, there was this unresolved rape case in Sweden. There's this notion that he only ever publishes documents that reflect badly on the United States. There's this notion that he backs populist or authoritarian governments. So he's, you know, he's no longer the press darling he used to be. And because of that, and I deal with this on Twitter all the time, it's like, because of that, people forget that what you're really talking about is the application of rule of law. You're not talking about a vote. Do you think Julian Assange is a guy you'd like to invite to dinner? Because that's not the issue. The issue is, do you think the arbitrary, I mean, let me just take a step back. This is assuming that the prosecution isn't for something like Sarah Harrison abetting a fugitive, because I think that is a somewhat different case, and that is the most important public action associated with WikiLeaks that distinguishes it from other journalistic outlets. But barring that, I mean, really what you're talking about is DOJ saying, this is a guy who is now considered a pariah by the U.S. media. And, oh, by the way, they often forget, this is one of the funny things, is people often say Assange is a traitor. Assange is not an American, right? Assange is an Australian. So the notion that Assange is a traitor to the United States because he publishes documents about the United States is kind of nonsense, but that's the mindset of where we've gotten when we talk about Julian Assange, that we completely forget that he is not an American. He's not in America. He's, you know, the actions we would be prosecuting him for are things that all happen outside of the country by somebody who is non-American. But nevertheless, right, so enough people in the media are going to go off of emotion rather than reason, and they're going to say, yeah, he's a big jerk, let's prosecute him, even though some of them, I mean, if you look at the DNC hack, if you look at the stories on emails that got published, the big media outlets, New York Times and Washington Post, published stuff just as greedily, just as aggressively as WikiLeaks did, right? They were happy to get the materials. And, you know, they've always, these same outlets have long forgotten it. They've long forgotten that Chelsea Manning, we're still relying on State Department cables that Chelsea Manning liberated, right? And I think especially now, because Assange has even less PR value, they forget all that. And so enough journalists are going to say, yay, we're prosecuting Julian Assange, and forget that that may mean next week they're the ones who get prosecuted for publishing a classified document.
Well, I'm wondering, when you have publications like the New York Times, the Washington Post, the LA Times, and other outlets publishing these government classified documents that they've gotten through people like Edward Snowden, like through Julian Assange, by implication, what would stop the Trump Department of Justice from prosecuting these other publications? What would
nothing, right? No, I mean, and I don't think that they would necessarily prosecute them because the New York Times has really good lawyers, and the New York Times has a history of setting precedent on cases like this. But I do think that, I think DOJ is more interested in kind of using it as a leverage point of saying, you know, if you don't behave, we're going to come after your journalists because they published these stolen classified cables, right? And remember, New York Times published one of the only public versions of Donald Trump's tax forms, right? We don't know where it came from. I don't think it was stolen, but it could have been. So it would be in some ways equivalent, and it would give, the Trump campaign, given some of the other crazy claims they make about the press and about the First Amendment all the time, you know, that Trump now claims that protesters were infringing on his First Amendment rights during the campaign. So given the crazy claims he would make, you know, there's nothing to say he wouldn't also go after the New York Times for publishing that tax return.
We're speaking with Marcy Wheeler, an independent journalist who covers national security and civil liberties issues, both at her own website, emptywheel.net, and other outlets across the country. Marcy, is there any indication that major mainstream corporate press outlets, like The Times, like The Washington Post, would close ranks behind Julian Assange to prevent a precedent from being set? And down the road, protecting themselves from prosecution from publishing government secrets?
Well, we'll see, right? I think that, and remember, it's not just WikiLeaks, it's also the Snowden leaks, and both New York Times and the Washington Post. I would say the Washington Post, certainly the Washington Post and New York Times actually published some of the more risky stories on the Snowden leaks than The Intercept. But that gets forgotten because that's how we remember these things. I sort of would expect the New York Times because they've got a good lawyer and the Washington Post because to maybe not close ranks, but at least raise concerns about the risks of this. And curiously, one of the things that no one really has explained is that what sort of started off this whole recent attack on WikiLeaks, before Mike Pompeo gave his speech, Julian Assange published an op-ed in the Washington Post arguing that he is just the same as Washington Post and New York Times. And it's almost like he had advance warning that DOJ was starting to go after him. And it provides a nice preface, if you will, to these attacks on him. I don't know whether that's the case, but I'd love to know more about how that op-ed got published. But regardless, the Washington Post certainly seemed willing to give Julian Assange their soapbox to be able to argue to the public that he is just like them. So that, you know, I guess that goes some of the way to closing ranks, like you described. But it's the other outlets like Los Angeles Times, Wall Street Journal. Those outlets haven't published as much of either WikiLeaks or Snowden, and so who knows what they'll do? And who knows what, you know, the chattering classes, Democrats really want to go after Assange, and they forget that, or national security journalists. I had this discussion with somebody the other day, and I'm like, so you're basically arguing that you could be arbitrarily prosecuted for taking information you knew was classified, and you get it. I said to this person, I said, you get it from somebody you know has clearance. You get it from somebody you know is illegally sharing the information. And they don't think that through, right? Because they're so angry about the damage that Assange has allegedly done to the United States by releasing all these documents And you know, to some degree, what no one is talking about is the fact that CIA and NSA can't keep their documents safe, right? And if they can get, if these documents can get to Julian Assange, they can get to Russia and they can get to China without us knowing it. And so even if we shut down the Julian Assange outlet, even if we shut down The Intercept or what have you, the fact that so many documents are being leaked means we have a leak problem. And that's where you fix the problem, because if you only fix the publication problem, you're still going to have the leak problem.
Marcy, in your view, there's a lot at stake here for the future of freedom of the press here in the U.S. How can the public respond effectively here, have some impact?
Well, I mean, if they really think, you know, I think that they should be ready to explain that whether or not you hate Julian Assange, and, you know, I perfectly respect the view of people who think he's a sleaze, who think that he's anti-American. But nevertheless, this is not about Julian Assange. It's not. It's about whether or not we think that possessing classified documents that you didn't steal personally, whether that is grounds for prosecution. I mean, I can't tell you how many Snowden documents I have on my computer. I used to have some pre-publication in my house. And when I think about, you know, the way in which they could come after me for having done that or for having all these WikiLeaks documents, that's the kind of thing we're envisioning. And with somebody as arbitrary as Trump, we shouldn't permit that. And so, you know, they can call DOJ, but they can also call, particularly if their members of Congress are on either the Senate Judiciary or House Judiciary Committee, they should call them and say, you know, this is a terrible precedent. We don't want it to happen because the First Amendment is more important than revenge against Julian Assange. You know, work on closing the holes rather than creating new holes in the First Amendment.
Well, Marcy, thank you so much for spending time and explaining a lot of these important issues that revolve around Assange. Regardless of whether you love or hate him, there's a lot more at stake, as you've explained. Before we say goodnight, Marcy, tell us a little bit about what our listeners can find on your website, emptywheel.net.
Yeah, sure. So I, in addition to covering issues, I cover WikiLeaks closely. I cover the Snowden documents closely. I've been covering the Russian investigation closely because I think, you know, there's a lot of conspiracy theories, but there's a lot that's there, and I try and sort through those things, as well as other issues about just how our national security creates pressures on civil liberties more generally.
Well, appreciate your insight and analysis on this set of critical issues, Marcy. Appreciate it. And we'll stay in touch, and hopefully there'll be some better outcome than what looks like it might be over the horizon right now. But again, thank you for spending time with us.
Thanks for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Marcy Wheeler, an independent journalist who covers national security and civil liberties issues at her own website, emptywheel.net, and other outlets. She's the author of the book Anatomy of Deceit, a primer on the CIA leak investigation.